Hello, friends. Once again, welcome to the Wrestling Podcast. You know, the podcast that covers everything bar WWE and bar AEW. You know, because there's a whole lot of podcasts that do that. So we've tried to be separate, and boy, did we try, and boy, do we hate monetization. But here we are. They just can't stay away. And so we got to talk about it. It's the Wrestling Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. That's wrestling spelled W-R-S-T-L-I-N-G. It's all of the graps without the E. But of course, we're not anti-E. No, no, no. Me and G, we're simply pro wrestling. My name is Liam. This guy is Gareth.
Hey.
And you, my friends, have joined us on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. Thank you very much for your time once again. And it's a double bumper episode this week. Not only do we have the 24-hour GCW special to cover, not only do we have the AEW Wrestling Podcast Invasion angle to cover, not only do we have an interview with MCW World Champion Adam Brooks, but we also have Inside the Ropes legend Sondra Roof joining us today to talk about the show. Sondra, welcome.
Thank you so much. Legend makes me sound quite above my station, I feel. But no, I'm so excited to be here. It's kind of fun to step out into the world of the wrestling. That's honestly my favorite thing. Like, I'm super excited to get to talk about GCW and some non-AEW and NXT things, because mostly over on, you know, Inside the Ropes, Kenny and I are always talking AEW and NXT, which I know, like, your territory is kind of invading ours right now, which is pretty fun. But yeah, like, independent wrestling is my favorite thing ever. It's my jam. It's usually like that fun wrestling that I watch that I'm like, I don't have to analyze this. And I it's not like we really have to like work too hard to analyze it here, right? No. Because it's just super fun.
That's exactly. It's all smiles, no real analysis going on here. Our listeners know that by now, to be honest with you. Right, so we've got a huge amount to get on with here, but let's start off with this crazy AEW angle. So last night on Dynamite, time of recording, we're on Thursday today, not only did we have Blooming Kenta showing up at the end of the show, thereby GTSing the Forbidden Door, it's wide open now, the NJPW-AEW relationship is in full effect, but also we had the competitors announced for the Japanese half of the bracket for the Women's Eliminator Tournament, and man, are there some names in that one. Gareth, do you want to run us down on this?
Yes, absolutely. So announced was Aja Kong, Maki Ito, Yuka Sakazaki, Emi Sakura, Veni, also known as Asuka, different Asuka, Ryo Mizunami, Mei Segura, and Rin Kado Kura.
Crazy. So we got representatives from Gato Move, Choco Pro, Marvelous, Tokyo Yoshi Pro, and then, of course, the all-round legend that is Aja Kong doing whatever the hell she wants, and fair enough.
Pretty much. Like, can't she just rule the world at this Pretty point? Much. Like, if Aja Kong came and was like, I think I'm going to rule the world now, I'd be like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's got that kind of goat status where I wouldn't rule out an appearance in NXT or something. She'll just rock up and do a Liger, you know, just do a show. And then off she
goes. I'd love it.
Yeah, same.
I love that kind of freelance status that you can have out in Japan, where you're just kind of like, I'm just going to pop up anywhere that will have me, like, go, you know, go where the shows are, go where the fun is. And I like that Aja is kind of at a point now where she's probably not going to be working 30-minute main events or, you know, huge hard-hitting matches anymore, because, you know, she's 50 years old, for Christ's sake, and Joshi wrestling is very hard on the old body.
Incredibly, like, hard, yeah.
So, what, I think she's 30 plus years into her career here.
Jeez.
But yeah, she can still have good matches. But I really like that she's really fun to play off of more kind of comedic stuff. She plays like a great straight person. Put her against like a Ito or a Emi or a Yuka, like any of these other people on the card, like, I think she'll just bounce off of wonderfully.
Yeah, for sure. Sondra, how much exposure have you had to any of these guys?
Not a lot, actually. I'm very much like a casual fan when it comes to Japanese wrestling in general. Okay. Like, every once in a while I'll dip in and watch something. Like, I've seen a couple things from Stardom, and I've seen like a little bit of New Japan. I am that person that watches Wrestle Kingdom once a year, and then, you know, we'll dip in for little things, right? So most of my exposure to the names on this list have just come from AEW. Mm-hmm. Like, because I've seen, obviously, Emi Sakura, I've seen in Pro Wrestling Eve as well, because I've checked out some of their shows. I love Pro Wrestling Eve. So, but I would say cursorily familiar with a few of them. A couple names I haven't heard of, and I'm excited to see more.
Yeah, same, to be fair. Yeah, no, it's exciting. It's really interesting how AEW has sort of become this nexus point for all of the other promotions that aren't WWE, you know, there doesn't seem to be any boundaries whatsoever anymore, which is just
except
for
WWE.
Except for like... WWE. You wonder how long could they hold it up? Maybe if they would just come to some sort of agreement and then all the borders were down. I mean, you'd think
that would be crazy.
Explode,
like, because it really does feel like the world kind of imploding in on itself, right? Like, because they have so many different promotions kind of working with AEW right now. Like, the NWA women's title is more important than the AEW women's title on the show, you know? So it's been interesting to watch because I think AEW does have its own identity, but it's been really cool to, I guess, get exposed to other talents. I mean, that was kind of the original mission statement of All In back before AEW was a thing, right? Like, it was all of these promotions coming together. I loved All In. I was there. It was amazing.
Oh, you were there? Just,
yeah,
oh,
I was there.
How exciting.
Yeah, because I was living in Michigan, so it was a short drive to Chicago. I was I do not want to miss this. So that was like one of the coolest live shows to go to just because it was like this nexus of like just everyone working together. And it was like, this feels like what wrestling should be.
Yeah. It's kind of like independent wrestling, a bit like what we're going to talk about in a second with GCW, but on a sort of mass, a much wider, more finely produced scale, which I think it's kind of what was exciting about NXT for me initially, because it's like, oh, this is indie wrestling, but with nice cameras. But,
if indie wrestling had money.
Yes, absolutely. But in a sense, AEW sort of taken that mantle now, and that's very exciting. What do you think in terms of where they're using people that you're not familiar with? Do you think they doing a good enough job of appraising you of who they are at the second, or is that... are you sort of left to do your own research? I mean, I'm interested to know sort of how somebody who's less familiar with some of these talents is taking them on board.
Yeah, I don't think they do a great job some of the time. I think they have with some people. Like, I think when it comes to like your Orange Cassidy's, for instance, right? Like, I think they've done a great job with him because he feels more integrated into the show. But I think one of the problems we've seen with some of the other talents that they bring in, like, and I think that was what made their women's division kind of flounder from the start, was that a lot of the Japanese talents that come in, they're not obviously cutting promos in English. Mm-hmm. They're not really introduced as characters all that well. Even Hikaru Shida is the AEW women's champion. She's barely on the show. Mm-hmm. When Rio was champion, she was barely on the show. So it's like, I like them, like they're good, they have good matches, but they just don't feel like they're as integrated. And it does feel like you're supposed to go out and do your own research, which doesn't make for great like weekly programming, I guess. Because I've talked with Kenny, because we cover AEW every week, and there will be independent performers that come in that I get really excited to see, like Bear Country. I don't even think we talked about it Inside the Ropes, but Bear Country was on AEW this past week in the Battle Royal, right? Or no, they were like Lumberjacks or something. I can't remember. But I was like, oh my gosh, it's Bear Country. Like, I've seen them in Black Label Pro. I'm so excited to see them. And people are just like, who? Like, who are these people? So I think it's, I don't know. I feel like with some performers, they do a good job. And then with others, it's just like, I think you're missing the mark. Cause I think when you're very familiar with something, you don't feel like you have to explain it to everybody else.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Gareth, what do you reckon?
I do wonder sometimes if just, where obviously as a promotion, it's kind of springboarded off the back of hardcore fans that will do the research or already know these people. You can't, you know, they've kind of been a bit complacent and carried that through over into AEW proper and kind of expected people to do the work. But, you know, not everybody's going to do that. So you're going to have a lot of people that are just left wondering, like, why should I care about this person? You've got to do the work actually on your TV show. You can't just expect people to Google and YouTube and find out stuff about people.
Yeah,
I think it's a difference between like the wrestling show mentality, like putting on a wrestling show that people go to, versus producing weekly television programming. Like, I think those two things are very different. And I think it's hard to find the balance there for some promoters.
Yeah, I think one thing that they were doing really, really well when they were wrestling out of, I think it was QT Marshall's gym in Georgia at the sort of height of the pandemic, was they were doing a lot of video packages. There was a really good one for Scorpio Sky that I remember. And they seem to have got away from doing that now. And I know that from listening to the Melts and such things, that those kind of segments don't always do that well from a viewership perspective. But I think for anybody that is watching, it enhances the product tenfold, and it's certainly something to persevere with, particularly if you're going to be introducing countless amounts of new talent from other promotions, no less. You know, I think that would help a lot.
Well, I think those are the kinds of things that are going to help build your audience steadily over time. Like they might cause people to tune out in the moment, but it's the difference between that instant gratification of a rating and building loyalty from an audience over time, you know? And I think that's where the big promotions that obviously have to serve the TV masters and things, like, I think that they struggle to retain viewership sometimes when it's just like, we're going to pop this rating, but then how do you follow it up? Like, you need to actually build that audience loyalty.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. Okay, so across the board then, so got all the Japanese feds that I just mentioned. There is a link up with DDT as well in Japan. Then we have AAA in Mexico. We've got NWA, as Sandra alluded to. And of course, Impact Wrestling. I mean, where do they go from here? MLW perhaps, Ring of Honor maybe? But they've pretty much got them all now, haven't they? This is it. They've assembled the Avengers, essentially. So now
I was going to say, it's like Pokemon. They've collected them all.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And, you know, this is the time to go ahead and take a bite out of WWE. So, Sandra, before we get into GCW, tell us a bit about yourself. How did you get involved with Inside the Ropes?
Yeah, so I got involved. I was basically just a listener to the show when it was Robert and Kenny doing live shows. I've been listening to Inside the Ropes since 2012, so since the very early days of Strathclyde Fusion. And I was that girl on Facebook who would write them thing like, you should watch NXT. It's really good. I promise. I know you don't have all the time in the world, but you should watch it because it's the most important thing, because it was my favorite. Mm-hmm. And eventually they were like, well, if you want to talk about NXT so badly, how about you do that on our VIP service and stop bothering us? So like originally my gig with Inside the Ropes was doing the NXT rundown with my original co-host, Bob DeGrand, who sadly died 6 months later. And then we had to kind of restructure everything. Yeah, it's just evolved that I started covering SmackDown with Kenny in, I think, 2016 or something like that. Now I'm on Inside the Ropes with Kenny every week covering AEW and NXT. And then I host Queen Street Posse that comes out every Wednesday on ITR Wrestling or wherever you get your podcasts with Jen Louise. And that's been a delight, too, just to kind of get to do two different styles of shows. And then I also cover retro on Patreon. So Kenny and I are watching WWF from 20 years ago.
You're a busy lady. Yeah.
Yes, very much. It's all wrestling all the time here.
One of the things that I found when I was listening to Queen Street Posse is you realize all of a sudden, wow, all of these wrestling podcasts are done by blokes. And and it was just so interesting to hear two different perspectives. And I think that the episode that really stood out, you were talking about Eva Marie. And you know, all you ever read about Eva Marie is relatively negative stuff, I think, sort of opinion wise. But you guys had a completely different slant on it, and it made me think differently. So I think it's...
Yeah, we love her. If you want to hear a podcast that loves Eva Marie and the Bellas, tune into Queen Street Posse, because not just because they're ladies or anything like that, but just like I think that they are genuinely important to WWE. And I mean, the Bellas especially have been incredibly influential. And so we get a lot of hate for that from dudes on the internet sometimes. Really? Who are just... Yeah, I mean, like... I really don't get too much of it, honestly. Like my timeline is pretty nice. Like it's pretty lovely because I've, I don't know, cultivated a group of nice people who talk to me about wrestling, which is really positive. But yeah, no, it's been great because Jen and I come at things very differently to each other as well. Because she grew up loving the Attitude Era. Like Chris Jericho was her favorite. And like on retro right now, he's my least favorite person. Like I can't stand him. Yeah. So I'm just like, when your entire character is calling Stephanie McMahon a slut, like it's just not for me.
Yeah, that doesn't age. That hasn't aged well at all.
No, not at all. And so watching the Attitude Era as a first-time fan has been really interesting in that regard. Gosh, but that's the thing I think, like podcasting with Jen, because a lot of people are like, oh, it's two ladies, but we're not just like talking about women's wrestling. We're not just talking about like lady issues or anything like that. We have long-standing wrestling fandoms, hers longer than mine, but I don't know, it's fun. It's a different dynamic for sure.
And you get to do a bit of writing as well, because one of the articles that you wrote for Inside the Ropes magazine, which is available
itrwrestling.com/magazine or insidetheropesmagazine.com.
That's the one.
You can tell I do this a lot.
I remember one of the articles you did, I forget, it was one of the earlier issues, which was talking about diversity in wrestling. And I think you mentioned Effie's Big Gay Brunch, and we'll get onto Big A Block in a minute. So how have you found writing for the magazine? And is that something you've been doing prior to that?
Yeah, so I have not actually had anything published ever before I started writing for Inside the Ropes magazine. Gosh. So it's been interesting. Like it's been hard for me to like sit down and have the discipline to write a thing. Like it seems like it should be easy to me, right? Like to just like get a page of words out of my brain because I talk so often, but it's entirely different to write something on a page. And like, thankfully I can put words together. Like I've always been kind of good at that, like throughout my life. But yeah, it's been a totally different experience putting things in written form, and one that I'm really enjoying for sure. Like I hope to continue doing it.
Anyway, let's move out of the E. Thanks so much for stopping by. Hope to see you again soon. Of course you will. You're going to be coming back. But let's move on now to the GCW shows that we're looking at. So, okay, guys, how much of this 24-hour wrestle-thon did the pair of you get into? I can tell you I only managed about 2.5 hours of this, but I'm confident that you'll have committed more time to this one.
I mean, I put on a marathon viewing, personally. I watched For the Culture once it got started, eventually, at night. Because I was watching live when the technical difficulties happened. Shout out to everyone who got them back on the air, because I'm sure that must have been very, very stressful.
What a nightmare, yeah.
Yeah, so I watched For the Culture, and then I decided that I needed to sleep, so I didn't watch like the full 24 hours. I apparently need to go back and watch Solo Darling versus Billy Starks because I keep hearing great things about that match. I missed it. I don't know what like when it was on. I need to investigate. But I woke up.
Solo Darling is brilliant.
I love Solo Darling. She's one of my favorite wrestlers ever. So I woke up at 7 a.m. here, Central Time, bright and early for Black Label Pro, because that's kind of like my sort of home promotion that I've been watching for a long time. So I didn't want to miss that. So like Boomer Hatfield versus Rob Killjoy was like what woke me up in the morning, basically. And that led right into Camp Leapfrog Cybernetico, which was just an hour of delight, which led right into Effie's Big Gay Block. Obviously needed to watch Effie's Big Gay Block. And then Alley Cat's Real Hot Girl Shit was immediately after that. So how could I switch off the TV? So from like 7 to 1 or 2 or something like that. I can't even remember. It all just blends together. But I had quite a marathon viewing on the Saturday.
That's epic. Yeah, fair play. Okay, all right, Gareth, what you got?
I did our required reading slash watching. But I also dipped in and out. So like the opening match, 2 out of 3 falls between Leo Rush and Blake Christian. I caught bits and pieces just generally throughout the rest of the, mainly the next day when I woke up again, I kind of caught maybe the last 2 shows of the thing as well. And then finishing up with RSP defending the GCW title against Blake Christian. So nice. I'd say I probably watched somewhere between 6 and 8 hours of 24 with intentions to go back and watch more.
Okay, so strong efforts all around. Okay, this is good stuff. So Blake Christian bookends the 24-hour event. I only saw pictures online, but Leo Rush's new look for that match, I thought he looked phenomenal. Was there a difference in his wrestling style, Gareth? Did he change things up? Or was it that sort of Finn Balor thing where he looks really cool, but there's not necessarily a difference in the sort of approach to the match?
I found his style to be a bit more sort of vicious, still with some of the usual stuff, but kind of a bit more violent.
Which was good,
I thought. But as a match on the whole, it was a bit sort of muddled, sort of entertaining, but some issues with the stipulations. And yeah, it kind of was fun, but imperfect as a match.
Fair enough. Okay, no, that's cool. I wonder if that's something he'll keep up with, though, you know, having the different persona to work with in different promotions. I think that could be quite fun, you know, particularly as he's got the freedom to go wherever he wants now. It's something I'd quite like to see him take over to Japan. I think that sort of thing generally works quite well. They seem to quite like that. So if he does want to make an impact in the Best of Super Juniors, why not bring that gimmick over?
Yeah, what a treat he'd be in the New Japan Junior Division right now.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Absolutely. All right, let's go for the Culture then. Overall feelings on this block?
I liked it. I mean, I thought it was fun, but it was... I don't know. I didn't know a lot of these performers as well as I knew some of the other ones. AJ Gray, I'm quite familiar with from Black Label. And obviously he's the one who's like, you know, running the show. So, I mean, I think it was definitely a strong effort from everybody. I liked it. I felt so bad for them.
Yeah.
With, you know, if people don't know, the stream went down for about an hour and it was very stressful for them trying to get back up. They were like, the power went out, and it's, I don't know, it felt like the most independent wrestling thing that could happen, really, was just like, of course there's going to be technical difficulties. Like, those of us who've gone to independent shows, we've waited 45 minutes out in the snow to be let into the building because something has gone awry, right? And it just felt like the 45 minute wait out in the snow, except I was in my living room in my pajamas, so I was comfortable.
Yeah, it's 100% that, isn't it? It's just like, right, how can we make a no fans show feel like a real indie show? Leave people waiting.
They nailed it. Yeah, absolutely. If it was in Britain, the ring would have had to have broken. You know.
Or not arrived.
Yeah, well, not arrived. Yeah, there's that. I thought this was a good, fun show. Like yourself, I wasn't that familiar with many of the performers involved. I mean, a big favorite on this podcast is Calvin Tankman.
Oh, love him. And I've always heard Calvin Tankman, and this is the first time I think I've actually seen Calvin Tankman wrestle.
Wow.
He's so good. I mean, I wasn't surprised by how good he was, but like, oh man, I loved that match.
Yeah, sky's the limit for him, I think.
He's like the second coming of Samoa Joe, I think. You know, his style's very similar. He's similarly athletic, but he's also, he just looks mean, like he's a badass. You know, nobody's going to mess with Calvin Tankman.
And he can move so well too. Like, you see this big bad guy like come out and stuff, and it's just like, oh, but he can also jump and do things.
Yeah, for sure. And he cuts a mean promo too. They've got him over in MLW, and you know, he's killing guys for fun over there, but then he gets probably longer on the mic backstage than he does in the ring, and he's very good. You know, he's a good lucid talker. So yeah, I think he's going to be a big name relatively shortly, I would have thought. But yeah, PB Smooth as well, right? It's not somebody I'd seen before, but I thought he was an interesting cat.
Surprising, wasn't he?
Yeah, for somebody so tall, he was doing things I wouldn't have expected to see from a man of that sort of structure. So yeah, I was very impressed with this match overall.
I think that was probably my favorite match of the block, actually. Mm. Like, just the two of them, I thought worked really well together. And I've seen PB Smooth, I think, like on a couple shows. I don't know if I've seen him live, but like just on, you know, live streaming on IWTV, you kind of like get to know names and stuff like that when you're watching a bunch of the different cross promotions. And man, like both of them were just awesome. I loved it.
For sure. Another one I wanted to talk about was The Rep versus Thick and Juicy. Again, so two teams that I hadn't seen before, albeit I was familiar with Willow Nightingale from the Bird and the Bee. I thought this was really, really fun. I wasn't expecting an intergender match here. I don't know why. I should have just read the match card, of course. But I thought it was really great. The Rep looked like badasses. And Thick and Juicy, what a cool tag team. Can they just be everywhere? There.
I would love for them to be everywhere. Like, I'd never seen The Rep before. I just said that Calvin Tankman and PB Smooth was my favorite match. Like, I might have been lying, because as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh man, like Willow Nightingale and Faye Jackson can do no wrong in my books, you know? Like, they're incredible. I've been familiar with both of them for a while. Willow especially from The Bird and the Bee, and just from general being aroundness and stuff, and just being a pure delight of a person. But this was a blast. Like, both teams I thought worked really well together. I was happy to see an intergender match here. It wasn't that surprising necessarily, just because it, you know, like it fits in the GCW landscape, right? But I thought that their dynamic was super, super fun. Faye Jackson just like putting her butt on people is a delight.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's great. Like, I love her.
Yeah, it's perfect. I love how much Nate Carter seemingly had an allergy to that.
Yeah.
You know, created a really nice story for the match. You know, it was a way for them to get the advantage. It was great. Really nicely done.
The Thick and Juicy's shtick doesn't work if they don't have good people to play off of.
No.
And I think The Rep absolutely held up their end of the bargain here.
But they were saying The Rep have been around for something like 10 plus years. I always think it's crazy. Like, how have I not seen these guys before? It's amazing how many wrestlers are out there that you just haven't come across. But,
well, that's the problem with shows like this, is that I always get like 10 new favorite wrestlers that I'm like, I want to watch everything they've ever done. And then I remember that I can't watch all of the wrestling in the entire world because there's so much, which is a great problem to have. I love being spoiled for choice, but it's just, you know, you can't know who everybody is and stuff. And it makes cards like this and events like this that kind of have multiple promotions coming together a treat, because then you get to discover new things.
That's it. Exactly. G Money, what was your favorite match from this block?
I think it was probably the Tankman match, just for that one. Enjoyed it sort of throughout. Like, obviously it was difficult to really get into the opening tag just because of the kind of audio and visual issues, you know, the other four matches on the card, I thought were all good fun. Just seeing Calvin Tankman kick some ass is always going to be a winner for me.
Do you think we'd like him so much if he didn't use the Rikishi driver? That's very much been a childhood favorite for us.
I mean, it certainly helps.
Yeah, it definitely
like,
helps.
It was the immediate draw, wasn't it? You're just like, yeah. Oh, like the first time you sort of see that getting used and just, you know, the way he hits it as well.
Yeah. Oof. For sure.
I like him and I don't have Rikishi nostalgia. So, I mean, like I'm watching Rikishi now currently on Retro for Patreon, but like Rikishi's like a now performer for me. He's not like a childhood performer for me. So
that's good. I kind of envy you in a way, sort of being in that position and watching that stuff now. That sounds like quite a nice place to be.
It's interesting for sure.
Where have you got up to?
We're in, what month is it now? February of 2001. So we're leading up to WrestleMania 17, which I hear is quite a cracking show.
Good times
just,
indeed.
Just a bit.
Yeah. It's one of the ones I actually have seen, WrestleMania 17, but it was years ago. So thankfully, I don't remember everything that happens on it. Mm. So we can kind of like go into it with some twists and turns.
Amazing.
Oh, mate. Yeah, this is a good way to live.
Has, I believe, Kenny's favorite match on it as well.
Yes, it does. It does. Which is a match that I had forgotten was happening until he did that graphic for ITR. And I was just like, oh, now I know that that's happening. Okay.
Yep. The boss can like what he likes. Let's move on quickly. Go on.
We were collectively just like, oh, no. when we saw that. It's pretty much the antithesis of what we stand for.
Uh-huh.
Getting ready to be kicked off the network any day now.
Welcome to Kenny and me podcasting weekly and me being like, no, you don't understand. This person's really good in Black Label or whatever. And he's just like, I don't care. Give me all the McMahon drama.
Does he have sort of exposure to any sort of indie stuff or Japanese stuff?
Not a lot.
Interesting.
Like he's been to some ICW shows and stuff. And like, I actually took him to Two Cup Stuffed, the GCW Black Label show that was All Out Weekend two years ago, whenever there wasn't a pandemic. It was the last time that there was like an All Out where there wasn't a pandemic. And I took him to that. And it was funny because of course he was popping for like Gangrel was on that show because it was Gangrel versus Orange Cassidy. Mm. And Jerry the King Lawler fought, who did he fight? I think he fought Manders. So it, you know, like he was all excited, like, oh my gosh, it's Jerry Lawler. And like, oh my gosh, it's Gangrel. And I'm like, yeah, but Orange Cassidy though, right?
All the wrong things.
It's just, it's funny just how different we are, but it makes for some good discussion.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's what you want.
We're going to have to coax him over here at some point.
Yeah, that's
he'll be out of his depth.
Yeah, we'll have to set him some homework first, I think. Uh-huh. The last one I wanted to mention on this show, and I'm going to butcher his name and I apologize in advance, is Saeed Al-Saba, who was in a three-way match against Ken Broadway and Lee Moriarty. Lee Moriarty is a name I've heard quite a lot. This is the first time I've seen him, and I thought he was impressive. But this Al-Saba chap, I couldn't get over how fast he was. He looked like a glitch. You know, when I was watching him, I'm like, really? You know, he was like peak Ricochet or peak Will Ospreay. You know, you see somebody move in a sort of unnaturally fast way. It was really impressive. So yeah, he's probably going to be somebody that I follow a little bit more closely going forward.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with him either. And I was, it's one of those, oh my gosh, I'm discovering just how much talent there is out there that I haven't seen before, which is incredible. Yeah. Lee Moriarty, I was familiar with. And so, I mean, this match was something that I was looking forward to as the main event, just like knowing, I guess, the other two guys. And Saeed Al-Sabah absolutely impressed me. He was awesome.
I enjoyed this match, but it felt messy was my sort of takeaway. Like, I definitely felt like there were lots of stuff that wasn't being hit clean or that didn't quite work as maybe they'd have liked, which kind of detracted from my enjoyment somewhat. But, you know, I could kind of see what they were going for. And I'm like, I do want to see all these men again.
Yeah, that's fair enough. All right, well, let's park that there and move on to Effie's big gay block. Now, Gareth and I were very much looking forward to this because we missed Big Gay Brunch at the Collective. Did you get to see that the first time?
I did. Yeah, that was the only Collective show I actually got to see in full. Because I ordered that and I made a morning of it again, like when I was watching that one. So yeah, because Big Gay Brunch, back when we thought that we were going to go to WrestleMania in Florida last year, that was the one show that I was like, I 100% have to be at. Like, I was so excited about it. I love so many of these performers. Effie is probably my favorite independent wrestler currently. So yeah, like I was all in, and there was no way I was going to be missing Big Gay Block. Like originally my plan was just to wake up for Big Gay Block. But then when I saw Black Label was earlier, I was like, well, fine. I'm just gonna make a morning of it. But no, this was awesome.
What did you make of it relative to Brunch? I'm assuming Brunch was a longer show, was it?
Brunch was a longer show. I think Brunch was probably better. I think Brunch had a little bit more pizzazz to it. I think just
Okay.
because it was a little bit more able to be its own thing. Because I think this 24-hour stream, obviously everybody was exhausted. Effie himself said he'd been up for like 36 hours or whatever, doing logistical things. Like he
Crikey.
looked maniacal at the end of the show. Like he really like wild haired. I haven't slept. I give zero fucks. Effie was like my favorite thing. It was great. But I mean, I really liked Big Gay Block too. I thought it was awesome. Like comparing the two is hard because I really enjoyed both of them. Like, I feel like with both of them, I felt like I walked away proverbially covered in glitter and just really happy about it. So,
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. All right, gee, let's start with you then, mate. What did you take away from this one? Any particular highlights?
the end need to be everywhere. Like, what a kick-ass
Did
powerhouse
they
tag
ever?
team.
Yeah, this is the first time I'd seen those guys. I'd heard of Paro, hadn't seen Odinson before. Whoa. When that dude, he power bombed somebody from the stairs into the ring.
Yeah,
I
just
mean,
heaved him.
what?
That was insane.
That match was literally full of sit-up moments. You know, there was another point where I think Odinson had Faraday, Xavier Faraday, and he had him on the outside and sort of lifted him up almost to the height of the top rope and then slammed him down on the ring apron, which we know is pretty hard part of the ring, I gather. Oh my
Allegedly.
God. Jeez, you know, where have these guys been? Have you seen them before, Sandra?
The end. I've seen Paro before. I don't recall seeing Odinson before.
Right.
I saw Paro live at a Rise show where I saw Effie versus Devon Monroe on that show too, which was really cool. And like Effie was cutting a promo afterwards and Paro came out to challenge him or something. So that was my first, I guess, like seeing of Paro. And he was on Big Gay Brunch as well because he was in the Twink Gauntlet just decimating dudes.
Yeah,
Oh
he's the twink
man.
hunter, right?
And non-binaries. Like, and that's the thing is like he was the twink hunter in that match, which was awesome. No, this match was great. Like, I mean, my Crucible babies, they feel all grown up. like Joshua Wavra and Xavier Faraday, they've so come into their own. Like, it's awesome to see. It makes me so happy that they've like, because like they went through some stuff earlier this year and it was rough. And it's, I don't know, it's great to see them shine. And I mean, the end, they're just big bad dudes, man.
Yeah, I thought this is a really good example of how you can have a match that in retrospect feels one-sided, but when you're watching it, it felt competitive. You know, it wasn't like a squash match, but if you wanted to get the end over as an absolute bunch of killers, congratulations, you've achieved your goal, you know. But by the same token, Oreo Speedwagon, they lose nothing in defeat. I thought they both looked really good, really
They just
credible.
felt like they had so much heart, right?
Yeah,
Like
that's
it's
it.
that,
Yeah.
like it's that underdog, like I'm never gonna give up, I'm never gonna quit, I'm gonna throw my body off of stairs, I'm gonna jump onto all of the people that I can, I'm gonna just keep going. And even if they're like downtrodden and whatnot, the fact that they're not giving up in the face of such adversity just makes you want to root for them more. And plus they're called Oreo Speedwagon.
What a name.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love their little entrance thing as well. One of them rolls the other one up and they end up in a pose. That's, yeah,
So good,
I
right?
was on board already. That's great. Yeah. Very good stuff. Gareth, any other ones for you?
The main event kicked ass as well.
Oh, I did ever. This was a really good block, actually, wasn't it? Really, really good. Yeah. I hadn't seen Billy Dixon before. This was my first time with Billy, and I thought he was excellent. Effie's just great. Effie's really great.
What a maniac taking that bump down the stairs.
Man, yeah, absolutely.
So dangerous.
How long does he remain in our universe, do you think? He's got to be, it's got to be a matter of time before AEW more than likely comes sniffing around, doesn't it? He feels like the biggest star, probably, or at least one of the biggest stars of this kind of current crop of US indie wrestlers. He's very much at the top, I would have thought.
I would think so. I mean, Effie's been he's been so good for so long, right? Like he's just been incredible. And I think his ability in the ring is amazing, but his ability on the microphone to control a crowd, whether he wants to be a heel or a face, like Effie is someone that I never want to boo because I believe in Effie. Effie's like I understand what he stands for. Effie has gotten me to boo the shit out of him at shows because he'll just be an absolute prick to someone like Devon Monroe or Paro or whoever, and he'll come across as just such a sleazy slime bag of a dude. And I'm just like,
Amazing.
I know that you're the best human. Like, I know this about you, but he's, I don't know, he's just magic. Like, he's absolute magic to me. And like, nicest dude too, if you meet him, like just super, super nice and great with fans, great with crowds. And I think just everything he's been able to accomplish has been awesome. Him having such a mind for marketing and for business, you can tell that he's put so much into himself, right? Like when the pandemic hit and he was like, all right, so I'm going to start doing Twitch streaming and I'm going to start doing my own thing and I'm going to become my own brand even more. He's invaluable to someone like most likely AEW, of course. Like, I don't see him working as well in the NXT landscape because I think it's just, there's not as much freedom there. But I mean, he could take the world by storm.
Absolutely. I think he'd very much get lost in the shuffle in sort of the WWE sort of system. But yeah, like, I think as it stands, he's got sort of so much to give. And like you say, I think he's somebody that kind of knows how to kind of project and present himself so well. Like, you know, he's put on Twitter before, like his booking, you know, arrangements and stuff and like what needs to be in place if you want him on your show. And I'm just like, yes, man, that makes so much sense. You know, you've got a character and you want it presented correctly. You know, you're not gonna, you can't have a promotion half-ass it and sort of ruin it for you.
That's really interesting. I thought, and this is not meant as any disrespect to anybody else on this show or the other block for that matter, but I felt like there were a lot of wrestlers on this show that you can see in a couple of years time, this guy is going to be top draw. But I felt like Effie really stood out across both of these blocks for just having like a real sense of quality. You know, he felt maybe a slight step up from practically everybody else on the card. He just was a complete package. And I suppose that's owing to his experience at this point, but he really did stand out.
There's a sort of like air that someone who's really come into their own and has that kind of that veteran sensibility. And you can't really put your finger on what it is or when they get it. I would say it's the same as watching Mercedes Martinez live. When you see her, she's been doing it for so long. She knows who she is. She's awesome. Like, she can just control you with a look or with feel or whatever. And Effie has that about him. Like, he has that air where he lends, I mean, I don't want to say legitimacy. I'm trying to think of the word, but just like an air of prestige or just like, it's that it factor that they always talk about that you can't teach and you can't distill in any sort of way. It just, it arrives one day and you have it and he does.
There's people you see that you can tell kind of metaphorically have got their 10,000 hours. And Effie is one of those people, like you say, Mercedes Martinez, they just have got so many reps in that everything is almost like second nature. You know, there's no, they're not consciously having to decide on like what to do. They just do.
Yeah.
It, like, it's just natural. It's a natural body language. It's a natural spoken language. It's a natural thing for them to do. Like, they belong in there.
It's like breathing or, you know, swallowing, you know, just something you do instinctively.
Yeah,
for them now, fair. Wrestling is instinctive.
All right. Elsewhere on the block, any other highlights for you, Sandra?
I mean, anything Still Life with Apricots and Pears is going to be 100% my jam. I think she's amazing. She's been one of my favorites since she was created from the canvas of blank. So it's been really cool to like see her come into her own recently. I thought her new gear on this show just looked fucking incredible.
Yeah,
like, can I swear on this? Is that a thing?
Absolutely.
Okay. I was like, it's inside the ropes. I should be able to, but I don't know if you had special
we've
rules.
Never asked.
I was like,
we're just such good boys. Yeah, no, it's
yeah. But the Still Life with Apricots and Pears versus MV Young versus Ace Perry, I thought was super, super fun. Really enjoyed that triple threat. Also, Dark Sheik versus Devon Monroe. Dark Sheik is someone I didn't really know before Big Gay Brunch. I think that was my first exposure and like instant fan. And like when I first saw Devon Monroe live, instant fan. So those were kind of the matches that I was looking forward to, and they did not disappoint. Like, I loved both of those so much. There wasn't a bad match on this block, I think.
No, I don't think so.
I think it was definitely the top four matches on the show just kind of knocked out of the park. Still Life with Apricots and Pears was just so intriguing. Like, she's somebody that I've been aware of for quite some time, but hadn't actually kind of caught to sort of see wrestle. But I follow her on Twitter, and, you know, I'm just kind of, I've been kind of waiting for the opportunity to kind of see her, and boy, did she deliver.
She's like, in the past couple of years, it's just been incredible seeing how good she's gotten, you know, like, and like just being such a technical submission wizard. Like, I love that because I love that style of wrestling anyway. And I mean, she's just, I don't know, she has a presence. Like, she just has a presence about her. She is a work of art. Like, absolutely.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. MV Young is somebody else that, again, I've been aware of, just through Twitter and the polyam cult kind of invading my Twitter feed. And I've been like, oh, I need to see this person. So it was nice to finally see MV Young wrestle. And I liked him as well.
Yep.
That was a good time.
The other one that we haven't mentioned yet that I wanted to throw at you guys was Ashton Starr. I thought it was excellent.
Amazing, right? Like I had never seen, I think Ashton Starr might've been on Big Gay Brunch. I'm trying to remember. But I wasn't super familiar with either Dylan McQueen or Ashton Starr. And that was another one where just like, I don't know, it was such a clash of characters. And it was big and bright and fun and flippy and ridiculous. And like just all of the things that you want it to be, right? Like it felt like, I don't know, Big Gay Block in itself was kind of a variety show, right? Like it had so many different types of wrestlers and so many different groups represented, which was awesome to see. Like, again, I come away from these shows having like 10 new favorite wrestlers and it's a problem. Because I love Dylan McQueen too. Like that entrance was incredible. I was sold. I was like, I don't even care if he can wrestle.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I was just saying, it's so nice that GCW are producing these, the two blocks that we just talked about, serving underrepresented aspects of wrestling. There are plenty of people of color that love wrestling. There's plenty of LGBTQI plus people that love wrestling and I just think are underserved generally. So to have these two shows serving those communities, I think is really nice. It's a shame that you kind of have to have it cordoned off a little bit, but I think it's almost like a shop window to say, hey guys, there's all these great wrestlers out here, book them. Yeah. There's no excuse not to be booking these guys.
Yeah, in the UK, are you familiar with a wrestler called Big Wavy Roy Johnson?
No, but this sounds amazing. Tell me more.
I love Roy. He was actually he was in the UK title tournament, the inaugural one. Actually.
Okay,
he did the.
Also, I must have seen him then, but I like
he did the backstage. I don't know if he'd call it a rap himself. I gather he was pretty embarrassed by the whole thing, but it's Johnson, Big Wavy, likes chicken, no gravy. If you're going to make a statement, that's the one I would say. He actually put together a precursor to For the Culture over here called Everything Patterned. And it was a sort of all people of color show in London. And I remember an interview of him where he was talking about going to see Crystal Palace, the football team that he sadly supports, for the first time. And, there's Ian Wright, a very famous black football player over here. And that was who, without any background whatsoever, he immediately gravitated to. And Roy was talking about how that could well be the same in wrestling. Like if you bring a friend along who happens to be a person of color and they're sat there and there's nobody at all that they could identify with, then you've potentially lost a prospective fan. So it's in as much as it's a wonderful, ethical thing to do, it's also a business thing to do. Why don't we want this thing to grow? We want everybody to enjoy wrestling.
Well, and I think that was a conversation we were having, I remember back like 6 years ago or so, before Stephanie McMahon invented women's wrestling on the main roster of WWE.
Yes.
I remember having a conversation with Kenny one time where I was like, there's no merch for me to buy from their stores. Like I wanted like, like merch that was my size. Like I'm a tiny lady. Like I want to be able to wear things that are going to fit my body. I want merch of my favorite wrestlers, like women specifically, because I was like, hey, like that, I have money to give you, but I'm not going to give you money if you don't give me something to buy. Yeah. And so I think what you're saying is like similar to that, right? Like a lot of queer people are like, I want to find people to support who are like me or who at least make me feel safe in their spaces. Because a lot of times wrestling shows don't feel safe for a lot of people and that sucks. So I think having these types of shows like For the Culture, like Big Gay Block, or even shows where they just make it very clear that like racism, homophobia, transphobia, et cetera, are not going to be tolerated in their spaces and they make a statement about it. I think that's helpful, like from a business and an ethical point of view, like everybody wins that way.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody wins. Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. Those are the two prescribed blocks. So from your collective viewing, then any other highlights across the 24 hours that we want to talk about?
I mean, I would say the Camp Leapfrog Cybernetico was just like, it was everything good about that promotion that shut down earlier this year. Yeah. Without the problematic bits, it was just the fun, like it felt like fun comic characters coming together and being delightful and just seeing everybody shine was awesome. Like Boomer, I will never not have feelings about a very good professional wrestler and Boomer Hatfield when they're in a ring together, because I mean, it's father and son drama. Like the son unmasked the father a while back. And when you get like, it's just, I always like words become hard because I just have so many Hatfield feelings. And when Molly McCoy gets in there too, and they're like tearing it up, I'm just like, the Hatfields and the McCoys have stolen my heart right out of my chest.
Too many good names.
I know, it's so much fun. Still Life was in that one as well. She looked awesome. And there were some wrestlers that I hadn't seen before, like Erica Lee, I believe was her name. I had never seen her before and she was great. And then Abby Jane too was like a few matches in and she just was like flying all over the place and being just this little underdog delight. And I don't know, like I wanted to see more. I think a Cibernetico is always going to be pretty fun and intense because, you know, just the nature of the match being 10 on 10, it can be crazy, but everyone has to enter in, you know, like in a specific order and whatnot. I love a Lucha Rules tag crazy situation, especially with colorful bright characters. Like it warmed my heart in all of the nostalgic ways that I wanted it to.
Yeah, this is really something that I feel like wrestling should do more of, to be honest with you. And of course that promotion you alluded to was probably best known for it, but you know, there's so much crossover, I think, anyway, with wrestling fans and comic book fans, you know, massively so why not lean into that more and make more sort of superhero-esque characters almost, or you know,
and have cartoon lore.
Characters. Yeah, exactly, that's the big thing as well.
Yeah, but so you're rewarded for long-term storytelling, but then you still, even if you're not like enveloped in it, you still go, oh my gosh, Still Life got bulldogged off the top of a thing. That's pretty crazy, you know, and you can enjoy the fun, colorful nature of it without knowing all of the lore, but that just kind of adds to the experience, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely. Guys, what was the Blake Christian, Ricky Shane Page match like?
Good. Really enjoyed that one. Blake Christian, I think, has been on a real tear as of late. Mm-hmm. We talked about him having a great run in Impact. He's turned up in New Japan. You know, I think he's obviously got a lot of eyes on him, and RSP is always a delight / terror, depending on your perspective. And yeah, kick-ass match. I just thought it was a really good way to bookend this 20, you know, Fight Forever, like having Blake Christian open and close the show effectively. I thought it was quite cool.
Yeah, because he's been Mr. GCW, hasn't he?
Yeah. But it looks like he's done. So I'm not sure where he's off to. But looks like that's it for him in GCW, because this was a title versus GCW career match, which Christian lost. So who knows? I know he's got another appearance in Impact coming up.
Yes.
So it might be that, you know, Impact have locked him down, or who knows?
I think that would be a good fit for him, to be honest with you. I thought he looked very much at home and like a traditional X Division guy there. So I wouldn't be mad at that at all. And let's face it, if he's in Impact, then he can be practically everywhere else as well, as we discussed earlier. So, you know, it's a freebie. Were you a Blake Christian fan, Sondra?
I've seen Blake Christian a couple times. Like, I know he's great. Mm. I haven't known, like, a bunch of his career, I guess. So it's one of those situations where every time I see him wrestle, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's really good. But he's just not someone that I'm, like, overly familiar with.
Yeah, that's fair. And Ricky Shane Page, look, the conclusion of this GCW title run for me is him moving up to AEW or similar. You know, it feels like this is kind of his big run on the indies. This is his finale almost, and bigger things beckon, because I think he's done a really good job at being hateable, because I've seen Ricky a few times live and I think he's such a likable dude. And then, you know, he's an absolute terror on GCW. So yeah, I've been really impressed with this, and I hope bigger and badder things await, albeit not too soon, because we don't want to lose you, Ricky. Okay, well, there's a few things to talk about as a whole. You know, is this something we want to see again, the 24-hour wrestlethon?
I think if they wanted to do it every once in a while, sparingly, like maybe yearly, maybe every other year, something like that. I enjoyed it. And I think shows like this kind of get you behind the talent, because you see how hard they're working and you see how many matches they're putting on, right? Like you saw how tired Effie was, and you saw like a very good professional wrestler wrestle back to back, because he was in the main event of Black Label, and then he was, you know, in the Cibernetico where he was in for quite some time. And, you know, they're talking about people who've been up all night and having to do multiple matches and all that kind of stuff. It feels very in the spirit of independent wrestling, where you sacrifice not only your body in the ring, but you also sacrifice things like decent food and sleep and whatnot that are not healthy, that you shouldn't have to sacrifice to be a professional wrestler. It's ridiculous. But that's like, that's how they are a lot of the time. I think it was a really cool effort. And I think that, especially for people across the world, right? Like, I mean, you guys are 6 hours apart from me. You can catch different blocks of it. Like, it wasn't something that was just running on American prime time. So it was nice for, you know, the people in Japan could watch different blocks to what we could watch, or if you work different shifts or something. It was kind of cool that there was something on for everybody. Like I caught, I think, a little bit of just the end of the show because I like came back home from running errands and just switched it on. And it was kind of nice and comforting just to have independent wrestling streaming for free. So I hope the wrestlers got, like, I know the I can't remember if it was Indiegogo or GoFundMe, but it looks like they raised quite a bit of money.
Yeah, it was something like 50,000.
Yeah, wow. Which is great. And like, I mean, they've been hit hard in pandemic time. So it was really nice to see something to give back to the wrestlers as well.
Yeah, definitely. Bit of a constructive criticism is, for me, I would really like to see more of a, so it was something to differentiate between the shows. It's very difficult. Like, I appreciate they were probably relatively stuck for venues and the one they had was absolutely fine. But, you know, the hard cam was sort of up high, which wasn't ideal, and you know, a few little sort of gripey bits like that, I suppose. But you know, even if it's just, I don't know, there's some flags at ringside or something with the logos on it, or just anything just to say this is this block or this is that block, for me would have added a fair amount of value.
Maybe even like a border or an overlay or something that would be in a different color, because I know they had the hashtag in the corner, but it was like small and kind of faded. And I mean, obviously they have the capability of doing an overlay for the different blocks, because I think that is like, that's a valid criticism, because you know, Black Label Pro looked like Big Gay Block, looked like Real Hot Girl Shit, looked like everything else. And I mean, there's a lot of difference between some of the promotions that were represented, right? Like there was some of the like hardcore deathmatch grrr stuff. And then you have Camp Leapfrog where it's like, we're happy and colorful and incredibly G-rated. So I think that it's hard to pull off when you're running on such a tight schedule, but I think something like that would probably be helpful for sure.
It's something to build on, isn't it? I think ultimately, I think this was a success. It was a lot of fun, but not without its issues, you know, stuff to be built on going forward. And like you say, I think it'd be fun to kind of have this as a annual, maybe biannual show going forward, perhaps.
Yeah, for sure. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about, Sandra, on this, because you're probably a bit more close to it than we are, even going back prior to the pandemics, how do you evaluate the current state of US independent wrestling? And I ask that because there's been a lot of people scooped up from the NXT system, and Lord, we know about that over here in the UK, what used to be our scene.
Right.
where do you think the US scene is at the second?
I mean, pandemic makes it tough because it's hard to say, because obviously the pandemic kind of shut everything down, right? But I would say prior to that, at least the independent wrestling that I'm familiar with, like, which I would say is primarily the stuff on IWTV. So like Black Label Pro are the shows that I used to go to when I lived near there. I would watch some Southern Underground Pro, like on IWTV when they would stream. I've seen some Anarchy shows when they would stream on IWTV, that kind of thing. I think they're thriving. Like, I think that they're building new talent. Like on the Black Label block, you saw Levi Everett, who's like an Amish dude who churns butter. And like, that's his thing right now, but like he's getting really good, right? So I think that they are in a place where there's always new talent to find. You just kind of have to let them shine and let them be. And I think that they are, like, I think that there are enough independent promotions who are doing well right now that it doesn't feel like everybody's getting snapped up and the scene is dead by any means. It feels like it's thriving. It feels like it needs a pandemic to not exist so that it can thrive some more. But yeah, like I'm positive about the independent scene for sure. And nice. I think a lot of people are being able to become their own brand and become their own business. Like you look at a Warhorse and you look at a Danhausen, who I know just got signed by Ring of Honor, so he's not truly independent anymore, but like he built that, you know, like he built that himself. And Warhorse has built what he has himself, and he's able to like support himself with that, which is awesome to see.
That's fair. And I think that's a really nice note to end on, actually. So there you go, folks. That is GCW Fight Forever. That one's in the books, 24-hour special. Hats off to everybody involved. That's an incredible achievement.
Absolutely. And coming up next, we've got an excerpt from our full-length interview, which we're going to be broadcasting next week with MCW Heavyweight Champion Adam Brooks. This is just a little precursor to his match with Slex taking place tomorrow night, the 6th of Feb, in Melbourne for Melbourne City Wrestling as part of their first event in over a year, MCW Homecoming. And this is just to give you a little taste. We run our competition to whet your appetite to win a pass to watch.
And we'll be back after this. We move. Right, I suppose we should probably talk about Melbourne City Wrestling, particularly with Homecoming so yeah. close now. So for fans that haven't seen MCW, and I'm one of them actually, so this is going to be my first show, how would you describe it?
I would describe it as the premier promotion in Australia, really. I mean, every person that is signed at any major promotion have come through Melbourne City Wrestling. So they've been going since 2010. I've been there from the very start when I was the when I was a 19-year-old kid. You know, I've been there from Amazing. The start. So it's been so cool to just see it grow. Yeah, unfortunately, we've had a year off. But I know that everyone's super excited to just get back into the swing of things and just really kill it, just knock it out of the park with Homecoming on February 6th.
It's going to be so exciting to sort of be back in the arena there and with all those Melbourne fans that have been wrestling starved for a year. Imagine you're going to blow the roof off the place.
I hope so. I mean, that's the plan. I was supposed to have this, you know, I won the championship finally. I was meant to have this great run with it. You know, I was supposed to take it overseas. I had title defenses against TJ Perkins was one of them. You know, that was all lined up, ready to go. And then, yeah, the world just kind of went on pause and went crazy.
It's remarkable how many people were in that same boat. Because if you think sort of, I suppose Tetsuya Naito is probably the best example. You know, he won the bout at Wrestle Kingdom and then wasn't able to do anything with it really, you know, right up until June or so. And you know, it really curtailed what probably would have been quite an exciting run or what have you. But it's amazing that it's getting back on track. I wanted to ask you about this match with Slex. I've seen a few bits and bobs online. It feels somewhat heated between you two. How did this one come about?
See, I don't know, man. The last time we wrestled in January, it was very respectful. You know, me and Slexy, I mean, I thought we were good mates out of the ring. And then we did that podcast together and he was just, I think the easiest way to put it is he was just a bit of a dick. I don't know whether it's jealousy because he's not the champ. I don't know why he should be jealous because he's extremely talented. You can't take that away from him. Maybe he was just being a dick to bait me into this match. I mean, that's fine. I don't care. Like, I'll still be walking out the champ. Like, it's pretty simple, really. But yeah, it sort of threw me off a bit the way he was acting. But it is what it is, man, you know.
And so the match you guys have got lined up is not just any old match. It's a three stages of hell match, which is so rare. I mean, is there a particular reason why we've gone for three stages of hell? Is this something you wanted specifically?
Well, see, Slexy's been around since like 2005, I believe, and I came into the scene here in 2010. The very first time we wrestled was in 2013, and he beat me. Then a year later, we wrestled again, and I beat him. And just over the years, it's just been very back and forth. I've beat him. He's beat me. We're just, like, things have just been so parallel between us. And then when he said that he could beat me in any sort of match, I just thought, well, why don't you try beat me three times? You know, let's up the ante. Let's have three matches and we'll see who really is the best and who can walk away with the most wins to really show who's going to be the best, which will be me. Like, I'll beat him. Like, I'm younger. He does have the experience, but look, I'm younger. I'm faster. So we'll just see what happens. You can watch me beat him on mcwondemand.com on the Monday, February 8th.
So what we've got is the first fall is a standard fall. The second fall is a Falls Count Anywhere match. And if it goes to a third fall, it's a ladder match. Is there any one of those three that you feel you have a particular advantage in, or is this just clean sweep across the board? There's no chance he's getting anywhere near you.
It's hard to say, dude. I mean, we've wrestled normal matches before and it's very back and forth. We've never done anything, you know, weapon related in regards to like Falls Count Anywhere. I've won ladder matches. I'm pretty sure he actually beat Robbie Eagles in a ladder match for the Intercommonwealth Championship years ago. So again, it's just that parallel path that we're both on. If I have to say that I have an advantage in any of those matches, maybe the ladder match. I mean, I grew up idolizing all those, the Hardys, Dudleys, Edge and Christian. Like I was mesmerized by that. That's one of the reasons why I became a wrestler, because I first saw that. So, I mean, maybe I've got the advantage in the ladder match, but maybe the speed, because I can climb a ladder quicker. I mean, it depends how beat up I am, really.
Nobody climbs the ladder quickly. We've seen enough of these now.
I really wish we could be in the ballroom for this one. I think with just all the amazing spaces within the venue as well, in that anywhere full part of the match, I think that there's going to be some interesting stuff going down, I'm certain.
Well, we'll see what happens. There's been certain things I've been eyeing off for years, but I've never had an opportunity to sort of do much with it. So we'll see what happens, man.
Can't wait. Okay.
Take it down on out into the high street.
Hell yes. And we are back. So there we go. That is the MCW champion, Adam Brooks, is getting ready for the big match at Homecoming against Slex. And we got more information about that at the back end of the show. But before we do, Sondra, thanks so much for joining us. Please do stop by again, particularly for anything US indie based, because I get the impression you know a lot more about this than we do. So it's quite
I'm
good
a
to
huge
have your
fan.
Insight.
This has been delightful. Like it's fun to step out of my like big corporate wrestling bubble, right? Like this just feels like I'm getting to talk about the stuff that I love so much. No, it's been awesome. It's kind of fun to step away from the E for a second. Nice. Does it bother you guys that I call you guys the Wrestling Podcast instead of the Wrestling Podcast?
No. Do you know what? Because I love the name, and I thought it was really cool. Oh, this is clever because it's wrestling about the E. This is clever. And then, we came to the time to record the first one. Like, how am I going to pronounce this? This is
uh-huh.
So I think I sort of slurred it initially and just we'll see if anybody notices, and it's become more and more pronounced as we go. So no, the Wrestling Podcast is probably where it's at, to be fair. So yeah.
No, I love the name. I think it's great. Like your logo's awesome. And I love the concept, right? Like, because it does kind of limit you, except for when all of the other promotions come in to invade and you're like, hey dudes, like what are we doing here?
Yeah. Our forbidden door has also been kicked in.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. Kick down all the forbidden doors. We're here for it.
Nice. So anything that you'd like to plug?
Sure. If you want to find me on social media, I'm on Twitter at Sondra Ruth ITR. I'm on Instagram at Sondra Ruth. You can follow Queen Street Posse at Queen Street Posse on Twitter and Instagram. It's the abbreviation for street, not the full thing. Twitter wouldn't let us have all the characters. I mean, standard inside the ropes magazine.com, like we talked about earlier, you can read articles of mine there. Listen to Inside the Ropes every week. Follow at @inside_the_ropes, which you should already be doing if you're listening to things on this network. I think that's about it for me.
You are the plug boss, Sondra.
I am, apparently.
Let me just add a couple to that then. So if you want to check us out, we're on Twitter and Instagram. It's at WrestlingPod. That's wrestling about the E. And you can send us an email if you so wish. That's wrestlingpod@gmail.com. Let us know what we should be watching. If you want to see some articles from myself, from Gareth and the team, head over to itrwrestling.com. We're in the Japan and the elsewhere section and the interview section regularly. Got a cool interview coming up with Triple A's Hugo Savanovich. That'll be going up in the next couple of weeks. Hugo's a really fun guy to talk to. Lots of interesting stories. And if you are a WWE fan, then there's plenty in there for you as well. So by all means, join in for that one. And of course, if you want some Queen Street Posse merch or some wrestling podcast merch, then why not check out shop.itrwrestling.com. wrestlingobserver.com. And before we go, we mentioned Adam Brooks, we mentioned MCW. That show, Homecoming, is coming very soon. And as a result, we have a little competition going. So if you want to be one of the lucky people to get a chance to watch MCW Homecoming on Vimeo on demand on Monday the 8th, then all you need to do is go to our Twitter, which is @WrestlingPod, and find the full details of how to win. Anyway, in the meantime, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the grabs.